Thank you all for joining today. We're back for our, I think this is our fourth live market commentary that we're doing here. And this is where we talk about the latest developments in the market. We share our thoughts on them. And today, as your host, I am Albert. I'm the Deputy Country Manager in Stashaway, Malaysia. And we are joined today by Stephanie, who is our Co-Chief Investment Officer in Stashaway itself. And as this is a live event, if you have any questions, based on what we talk about, do feel free to post them in the chat box on the site, and we will get back to you later on. How are you, Steph? It's been a while.
Yeah, I know, right? Lots of happening in the markets. I'm in Hong Kong, freezing cold today.
Well, global warming, right, maybe. And I guess, you know, this year itself, we're almost at the year end already, right? And it's almost Christmas. So, you know, how time flies, right?
And, I know.
This year, 2022, pretty much has been an eventful year with many things happening. And we will actually be doing a market outlook come January next year. So do keep an eye out on that when we post the dates for that event. However, for today's session itself, this is where we look at current market conditions. I'd like to focus on two things. Firstly, being about the US, and the second one about China itself. We seem to be talking a lot about these two things in the past few webinars, but we do this for a good reason, because they are, you know, the key drivers, one of the main settlers of the economic growth globally. So, Steph, starting off first with the US itself, right? Last night, we have had the Fed raise interest rates by 50 basis points. We also had on Tuesday itself, economic numbers on, in particular, the inflation figures coming out, which came below expectations. So, would you be able to share your thoughts on this? What are the implications on the economy?
Yeah, I guess, the data and also the Fed has been keeping all of us quite busy, even though we're entering the last month of the year. So on Tuesday, we got the CPI number. So the market actually rallied on the number, because actually, if you look at CPI, the numbers actually came in below expectations, both on headline as well as core. So headline numbers came in 7.1% year on year, and consensus was actually looking for around 7.2 to 7.3. So below consensus was a good news. Also, if you look at the kind of trend of the CPI, it has started to roll over. So if you look at the peak CPI was maybe in June, that was about like 8.5%. But if you look at the 3-month moving average and even the 6-month moving average, I mean, they have actually been trending lower. So the 3-month and a 6-month moving average are kind of what the Fed really watches quite closely, because 1 month doesn't make a trend. But when you have the 6-month starting to turn, I think that sends a strong signal that inflation is coming off. If you look at the month-on-month increase, it came in at 0.1%. And 0.1% is, of course, very, very close to zero. And just a few months ago, we were seeing month-on-month increasing at a pace of 1%. So, I mean, this is a very, very significant slowdown in terms of inflation in the US. In particular, if you look at kind of the components of the CPI, what the Fed focuses a lot on is, of course, the surface inflation ex housing, because this is where kind of the labor market would have an effect. And this is where the part which is most sticky. So because if you look at housing has already started to roll over, even though it doesn't show up on the CPI yet, but there are like some more real-time indicators that you can look at. I think we mentioned a few last time. So those have rolled over already. So the market actually took the CPI news as a piece of good news, because if you look at where the bond market is pricing in, basically the bond market is saying that CPI will get to 2.5% in about 8 months' time. And that is very, very close to the Fed's target of 2% or 2 to 3%. So there's a lot of hope that, maybe the Fed will actually put on the brakes and slow down. And in fact, during yesterday's FOMC meeting, the Fed actually raised interest rates by 50 basis points. And in the past 4 hikes, the Fed actually had been keeping at 75 basis points. So 50 basis points is actually a slowdown from the previous pace, which has been historically very, very quick. However, the market actually, I guess, sold off on the FOMC meeting because of two things, I think. Number one is the 50 basis point hike was actually very well telegraphed. And the market was actually expecting a 50 basis point hike, and Powell has said that they will do 50. And the CPI coming off didn't actually make them, I guess, more dovish. So, for example, in the press conference that followed, Powell basically maintained a very, very hawkish stance, or he basically stated that the Fed would still be very resolute in keeping a tight monetary stance in order to make sure that they don't repeat the mistake that the Fed did in the 70s, which, if you remember, in the 70s, actually we had double like peak inflation. So inflation originally came off, but then the Fed actually let go of the brakes too soon and inflation started to pick up again. So Powell, given his mandate of getting inflation down, I mean, definitely has studied history and doesn't want to repeat that mistake again. So he was actually quite hawkish, and particularly when he saw kind of risky assets rallying, he didn't, I guess he wanted to put a lid on the animal spirits because that is kind of what causes very sticky inflation. So unfortunately, Powell had to deliver a kind of a more, I guess, hawkish message to prevent the, I guess, the stock markets and interest rate markets from rallying. And of course, I mean, the next few meetings will also still be quite key. And I think Powell will be paying close attention to data, incoming data. I think if you look at the Fed's composition, actually there will be kind of more dovish voting members being added next year, which actually in a certain way makes Powell kind of more likely to stay hawkish because he needs to take the lead in terms of the Fed maintaining their tight monetary stance to actually reach the inflation target. So yeah, it's kind of ice and fire. So you had good news on one day and then bad news the other day. So market kind of just did a round trip.
And the Fed Chair, Powell being so focused on getting inflation rate down to 2%, which is their supposed target neutral rate itself. We still have a long way to go, so that means interest rates are going to be higher for longer. A lot of talks have been about potential recession coming in next year itself in 2023. So how should one be positioned for such an environment?
Yeah, so the reason why, I mean, the bond market is saying, oh, inflation is going to come off a lot, and also interest, like the Fed will have to cut interest rates, is because the bond market is also expecting a very sharp slowdown in economic growth. And I mean, given the pace that we've had in terms of monetary tightening, I think if you look at some of the forward-looking indicators, including those that we track, US is actually slowing down very quickly in terms of economic activities. And quite likely, we're going to see a sharp slowdown and possibly a recession early next year. I think in this environment, of course, the bond equity relationship has not been, has not been negative in the past 12 months because the Fed was actually tightening. So if you hold a diversified portfolio, unfortunately, both stocks and bonds actually went down. So the protective part of the portfolio actually didn't perform as expected. However, as economic growth starts to slow down, I think the protective nature of bonds would actually start to come back as investors need to find safe haven. And also, if you look at the starting yield of bonds, right now, with Fed funds at such a high number compared to just 12 months ago, as a investor in fixed income, you're actually getting very, very good yield to start with. So I do think that over the course of the next few months or even next year, when economic growth starts to slow, you'll see kind of bond performing or fixed income assets performing as they should have in a kind of tricky environment. So again, it's back to having a more balanced portfolio of equities, bonds, gold, and other asset classes to weather through the potential recession that we're going to see in the next few months.
I guess I like to just pick a question here out of the crowd because they asked something relating to what we're talking about. And the ask is from Mark itself. He's asking, you know, are we expecting that there will be another rate increase after this recent 50 basis point increase with the expectation that, you know, potentially recession coming along?
Yeah, so I mean, the Fed wants to get interest rates above 5%. So, I mean, we do expect further interest rate hikes, but the pace is going to slow down. And whether the next hike is a 50 basis points or 25 basis points really depends on the data. So, I mean, that's why, I mean, at Sashway, we pay so much attention to incoming data to help us to kind of navigate these markets, because that's what the Fed is watching as well.
Okay. I guess switching gears a little bit to China itself, one of the big news that came out of China in November was multiple big news was the relaxation of COVID controls there itself. And we saw new guidelines being issued, relaxed testing for locals moving around, even relaxed travel requirements, right? And more recently, we even saw China stop releasing their data, the comprehensive data on new COVID cases. And they say that they only report symptomatic cases from now on. So the question here is that, you know, given the relaxation, you know, can you share more about the credibility of these moves, right? Because as China opens up, naturally cases will rise, and will they be forced to U-turn on their own policy? Taking note that this or yesterday itself, retail sales in China came down below expectations, of down about 6% for the month of November. So, yeah, what do you think about that, Stephanie?
Yeah, I think if you look at China's economy, it has been slowing down very, very quickly and slowing down for quite some time already, particularly with its kind of two growth pillars, I guess, affected by anti-monopoly campaigns, being the internet sector and also the property sector. So, I mean, those two are very, very important growth engines for China. And with the economy actually being shut down by COVID restrictions, I mean, that actually, like, that definitely doesn't help in terms of economic growth for China. And I think if you look at kind of the announcements over the past few weeks, it's been quite drastic. So more than half of the COVID restrictions have actually been reversed. Actually, Bloomberg estimates that 60% of the economy is now open. Now, of course, 60% is an improvement, but it's still far, far below like what the rest of the world is, particularly with respect to international travel. And that also affects quite a bit of how, I mean, Chinese can, I guess foreigners can conduct business in China and also Chinese can conduct business outside of China. So, I mean, that remains a very, very key, thing to watch is, I mean, when would China start to relax its international travel policy? In terms of, I guess, the economic impact, I think it's definitely a good gesture, a good sign. And I mean, back a few months ago when we were talking about our view on China, we said there's two things that we would monitor for like a sustainable China risky asset recovery. Number one is the COVID reopening. Secondly is economic recovery. So we've seen progress in the first part. We haven't seen a progress on the second part yet. And if you look at the PMI data, for example, it's still slowing down. Retail sales, as Albert mentioned, is still quite very, very quite bleak. I think because of the seasonality right now. So China is actually going through winter. It's very, very cold. And just given the lifting of restrictions, there's going to be a lot of cases. And in fact, I mean, there are like some models that shows over the next 2 weeks, we're going to see a peak in terms of COVID waves in most of China. So China needs to actually get through these, these waves. And inevitably, when you have like COVID waves, it affects productivity of the country. And then also you have Chinese New Year in kind of mid to late Jan as well. And that is another litmus test of the COVID situation, because you have people traveling, carrying COVID across the country. So that is another big test. So I think for the COVID, lifting of COVID restrictions to be able to filter through to the real economy, it would have to be kind of later in the first quarter, i.e. After Chinese New Year or when the weather actually gets warmer, because there's actually a lot of money liquidity being pumped in the system that is not being used because of COVID restrictions. So I think we, I guess if you look at the chart and the policy, that's definitely a positive development. But I think we need to see kind of more affirmative data to show that there's actually turning around of the economy. I guess, yeah, it's in Hong Kong, I mean, we actually can feel it quite quickly, the relaxation of the restrictions. So yeah, we'll be reporting in real time.
Right. Yeah, if based on what Steph just mentioned, if you have questions relating to China itself, you know, feel free to post them. But what I'd like to carry on from there is that, you know, with these, the reopening, cases are likely to rise, more people could get sick, economy could be affected locally. And as we enter Chinese New Year itself, slash winter, things are expected to slow down. You know, Steph, what implications does this have on, in terms of global growth and also inflation, right? Because when China opens up, yeah, the consumption is expected to increase, driving up inflation. And then it's also countered by the effect that more COVID cases could reduce productivity. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think the impact will be clearer towards the end of the fourth quarter and maybe throughout next year. Given that, I mean, China is, of course, a very, very big economic block. And the fact that China has been shut down for a year has negative impact on inflation. I mean, oil prices would be trading maybe $10 higher if China is not restricted by COVID. So when China actually can reopen fully, I think that provides some support to energy prices and commodity prices. Of course, that is offset by the slowing down in the US, right? So you have to kind of think in three-dimensional terms and how different kind of forces impact oil prices. And I mean, oil prices, of course, are a very, very important driver of global inflation. So net-net, I mean, the China reopening would be supportive of higher oil prices, but that is also tempered by kind of slowing growth in the US, which then, I mean, brings us to a very, very interesting dynamic, because it would be a reverse of like 2022. Or arguably later part of 2021, when the US is very strong, China is like kind of going through a economic slump. Next year, that may reverse. And of course, that has implications for global growth and how you position.
On that point, I got a question also from the audience that say, they're asking that, given that China COVID policy has shaken many foreign investors, their faith in China itself, so, you know, with this lifting of restrictions, would that help the Chinese market in terms of attracting new foreign investment, or, you know, would they still be cautious? I think what's my thoughts adding on to this is also we have the news that US came out with by adding a few companies to their so-called sanctions list itself. So, what do you think about it?
Yeah, so I think if you think about China, need to think about two forces, like the structural forces and the cyclical forces. So COVID is a cyclical force that, I mean, goes in cycles. The economy, liquidity, these are kind of cyclical forces. The structural force that will be in place for quite some time is the kind of changing of the US-China relationship. So before the trade war, before COVID, we had a sort of more globally linked economy, i.e. I mean, China has been working closely with like US. I mean, there's a lot of trade, a lot of cooperation, co-development going on. However, this trend has changed in the past few years, and going forward, it's very, very hard to see this trend reverse, i.e. I mean, there will be a bipolar world where China will go its way and US will go its way. So this is a structural force that wouldn't change. And I think, of course, that if you look at the semiconductors industry, for example, and US is trying to limit what China can import from US and its allies in terms of, for example, advanced technology. And if you look at kind of the chips or the technology that they're trying to prevent, it'll slow down China. But I think for some of the, for example, in terms of military, that doesn't use very, very cutting edge AI chips, I mean, that has not a lot of impact. But going back to the cyclical side, I do think that given the kind of potential reversal in China's relative economic performance versus the US, we can see China emerging markets being more attractive to investors in the next year. Now, having said that, of course, Chinese assets have rallied quite a bit, like almost 30% in the past few weeks due to COVID reopening. And that was actually a bounce from a very, very low level. If you look at the price to earnings ratio, like how expensive it is for MSCI China, for example, it was at nine times like a few weeks ago. Now it's came back to 11 times or so, which is kind of the historical average. So I think for Chinese assets or for Chinese equities to have more upside, we do need to see sustained earnings recovery. And that really depends on, for example, PMI turning up and expanding, the economy coming back to life.
Okay. And I guess just the final question for today itself, we circle back to what we talked about earlier about recession. And you know, given the expectation of a slowdown and a recession coming, why should we stay invested in funds itself or even stash raised funds, right? You know, should we just pull out and just wait at the sidelines? And when can we expect the recovery?
Yeah, that's a great question, right? Of course, like the probability for a recession is very high. But I mean, it's also number one, it's also a probability, right? Secondly, I think if you look at how risky assets perform, typically stocks or risky assets like bottom before the economy does. And it does so in with a lead of a few months. Thirdly, if you have a more balanced portfolio, for example, with equities and bonds and gold, et cetera, you can actually weather through a recession with lower volatility. So because the bond side would be supportive of the portfolio. So then, I mean, you don't have to worry about trading in and out because, I mean, frankly speaking, it's very, very hard to kind of trade in and out according to what the market is doing or what the latest headline is. So the best way to do it is actually to stay invested in the long term. And also, I mean, when the market is down, it's a good time to actually use DCA, dollar cost averaging, to, if you have spare cash, I mean, those are good opportunities to actually add to your portfolio.
All right. And there you have it from Stephanie itself. Thank you so much. This is the end of the session. If you have any more questions on what we talked about, or even on StashAway, please feel free to reach out to us, support@stashaway.com. As I mentioned earlier, we will be doing a market outlook event come January. So do keep an eye out on when that's happening. But yeah, thank you so much again for Stephanie for sharing your views with us. Thank you to all the audience for dialing in tonight. I hope you all have a good day ahead and do take care.